Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
well,
to
do it then.
Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, you're very welcome along to the Football Show. So later on, we're going to be joined by Kenny Cunningham. He's going to have a look back at the Premier League season that was. In the meantime, though, we're joined by hopefully somebody else will be seen in a Republic of Ireland shirt down the line. He's most certainly done very well in a West Brom shirt, their Young Player of the Year. And hopefully we'll be seeing him in the Premier League next year. He's at a brilliant 2020. Dara O'Shea, you're on the line. You're very welcome. Thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Congrats on the award, West Brom's Young Player of the Year. When did you get word?
I just got word this morning. Saw a couple of texts, so yeah, I'm really happy with it.
So, to sum up the season, one of two halves really for you. I don't think you'd made your debut until pretty much midway through the year, and then you seem to have kicked on 17 appearances in all. I think you pretty much started all but two of West Brom's last 18 games. So, you were biding your time a little bit, and once you got in there, you seemed to manage okay. Tell us about all that.
Yeah, it's been a hectic season, I think. Probably wasn't expecting to go as well as I had. Start of the season, I was kind of just there on the bench, just as backup, and was kind of looking at alone at the start of the season. But I was kept along by the gaffer and integrated into the team, and just started to grow more as a player, get more comfortable, and then yeah. I think around Christmas time, I came on the league to make my league debut, and then we had a FA Cup game then in January, played in that again, and then just kind of kicked on from there, really. Was put in at right back, did well, and that's where my chance came.
At the start of the season, were you keen to go on loan? Did Slaven Bilic talk you around, or were you pushing to try and stay and break into the team? What were you trying to do at the start of the year?
Well, my main goal was to push and to try playing the team. But I think realistically, I was thinking to myself, I want to get myself on loan again. I'd had a good season at Exeter the season before playing games, and I felt that I'd learned so much. So I think myself, I was obviously hoping that if I could break into the first team, that'd be great. But yeah, I was planning on going on loan and trying to get out somewhere. But I think the gaffer wanted me, and he made that clear. So I think I was more than happy to stay and to be a part of it.
And were you training pretty much with the first team all year round?
Yeah. So when I came back in pre-season, I was training with the first team. So that was nice. It gave me that bit of confidence. So I started to grow more with the lads then throughout the season.
Slaven Bilic is a charismatic fella. Very likeable. You see him on TV. Comes across really well. What's he like to work with day to day?
Yeah, he's great. I think he's a player's dream, really. I haven't really had a manager that's like him in the way that he carries himself around football. I don't think any of the lads have a bad word to say about you. Even if you're not in the starting lineup, they still love him, and that's the kind of person he is, the kind of character he has. But yeah, he's been great for us. I think even for the club, all the fans will say that the football he's brought this season is something that West Brom haven't really been a part of. And yeah, it's just really exciting to have such a manager who has his status and the clubs he's managed at is great, and obviously being an ex-defender himself is excellent for me and something I can really use to my ability.
And Dara, I know you went out on loan to Hereford in 2017 and to Exeter in 2018. Had you been playing centre-half on those loan moves?
Yeah, so at Hereford I played centre-half predominantly. I played a few games right-back, but again, it was nothing really what I was prepared for in the Championship. And then Exeter, I just played centre-half the whole season.
So how did you find slotting in at right back on your debut, championship, serious quality of players coming at you. What's that experience been like?
Yeah, it was great. I think the first game I got thrown in right back was Charlton away in the FA Cup. And I was kind of surprised by it. Such that the gaffer like saw me and he basically said, like, I think you can play there. And that gave me confidence in itself. I just kind of went out there with nothing to lose almost. Like, I hadn't really played here before. And I kind of just took to it. It kind of suited my game. I was able to still able to get up, still able to get back, defend. And yeah, it just everything just fell into place.
Do you expect you'll probably play the bulk of your football over the short term next year, probably at right back? Is that the most likely scenario?
I'm not really too sure. Potentially, I'm still seeing myself as a centre half in the future or whatever. But right. I think playing one or two positions or even more is great to have into your game. So I'm just really happy. Like, wherever he puts me or wherever any manager puts me, I'll play just because I'm eager to play and I just really want to get out there on the pitch.
Championship is the highest level you've played at thus far, and you're heading into the Premier League, and that's going to be very exciting. How did you find that step up to Championship, first team, week in, week out? What were the differences with, say, playing for a Hereford or playing for an Exeter?
Yeah, again, it was made that bit easier because I'd been with the team throughout the whole season and I had that experience as such in training. But then when it came to matches, it was mainly just the speed of the game. You can't really switch off. You could switch off a small bit in League Two, and obviously when I was with Hereford too, but it's just the quality of players you're coming up against, they're that bit smarter, they're that bit quicker, and you just have to be switched on and can't lose concentration, I suppose.
Did you find it enjoyable amidst all the pressure? I mean, it's kind of a pinch yourself moment and you're in there suddenly, or were you kind of too focused maybe to have those moments where you look around and say to yourself, my God, I'm here, this is happening, this is amazing?
Yeah, it was great. I think myself, I knew I was ready for it. I knew how hard I'd worked up to this season, and even during this season, I knew that I was as fit as anything. I knew that as long as I worked hard in games, as long as I gave my all, that I'd perform. And I think that pushed me through it. But yeah, it was a great season. There was a lot of pressure on us as well, which helped. But yeah, I think, yeah, I just really enjoyed the season.
Yeah, I can imagine. I guess you did have crowds for the first month or two, or maybe 2.5 months.
Yeah, it was obviously, it's nice there with the fans. Totally different when the fans weren't there. The whole environment of the game changes, and I think people's mentality does too. But I think, yeah, it would have been great to have the fans there when we got promoted there. But hopefully next season.
So you came through at Kevin's. I understand you're a big GA man as well growing up, so you were juggling the two. I think you played a bit at Jude's and Kevin spotted you. And was there ever a dilemma for you, or were you always going to pick soccer?
Yeah, when I was younger, I was big into my Gaelic and hurling, and I played for Jude's, yeah. And I suppose there was a time, but I think because I went to Kevin's at such an early age, and it was kind of a big step up even going to Kevin's because it was the other side of the city for us, but we knew that they were the best team around for producing players. So I kind of put most of my eggs in the basket at the time and kind of tried my best to become a footballer, but I was still playing Gaelic on the side. I was still like playing 2-3 games a weekend, like going from a football game to a Gaelic game or vice versa. So yeah, there was a bit of a dilemma, but I think I just started to gravitate more towards football, and obviously Kevin's were great at the time, and they were trying to produce an academy environment there, and it was just something I really loved and enjoyed.
And what part of Dublin are you from, Dara?
I'm from Temple Oak.
Temple Oak. So how were you trekking across the city? Was it parents or bumming lifts here and there, or how did all that work?
Yeah, it was parents mostly. My dad's been great. My dad's been basically my chauffeur driver when I was younger. He's dropped me here and dropped me everywhere, but and then getting lifts off other players that were coming across, because Kevin's had a big kind of players came from everywhere really to play for St. Kevin's. So but yeah, it was mainly my dad dropped me off.
And is he a big football fan, big sports fan?
Yeah, he's mad into his football and Gaelic and hurling as well. I think he's just sport mad like me.
Did they get over to see you play at all?
Yeah, they were over around the start of the season. They came over for a few of the cup games, and then eventually he came over for a few of the league game too, him and my mum. And yeah, they were, I think he was just missing football most when I went over to England, because he had no one to go watch anymore.
Jeez, what a thrill for them. If they're a sports mad family, if your dad's sports mad, and suddenly you're headed for the Premier League. It must be absolutely amazing for the family. Is he the type that'll tell you how proud he is, or is it a quick well done and that's it?
Yeah, he has mentioned how proud he is of me, but I think, I don't know, it must be good for them, I suppose. I think I come back to such love for my family, and it's great to have their support. And obviously, my girlfriend lives over with me in England too at the moment, and she's been great with me and pushed me on. But I think overall, just having the support there and everything, it's a joint effort from everyone.
What age did you move over to West Brom? I read about 16 you made the move from Kevin's?
Yeah, 16 I moved over from Kevin's to West Brom.
Was it a dilemma in any way? Was there any pressure from family to maybe stay and think about doing the leaving cert? Or was it, you know, nothing stopping me going here, no matter what kind of an approach?
Yeah, well, my mom's a teacher and she was kind of keen on me staying and getting my education and that. But I think she realised how much I want this and how much hard work I put in when I was younger. And then she eventually came around to it. So I'd say she's happy about that now. Yeah.
So you had to promise and say, I'll definitely study when I go over and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And do you do much as a matter of interest? Would you do much schoolwork when you go over, or pretty limited?
When you're in the academy, you have like college work, and it's actually called a BTEC degree to complete. And you do little other bits, like you become, like you do the refereeing course and little bits like that the FA make you do. But there's not a whole lot behind it. They kind of get you a degree in something, you do a couple of days after training a week, and you sit down and you do that.
Right. How did you find settling in? I mean, homesickness is probably an issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, to be fair, it's kind of funny, like I say to a lot of people, and a lot of people will say, like, were you homesick and that, and it never really dawned on me. I was brought over, and I went over with another lad from St. Kevin's called Evan Pierce. So we kind of both had each other over there, and then the Diggs family that I was with were unbelievable. Like, the house I stayed in, everything about them, they were really top notch to us, and just made me feel like home. Like, when I come back from training, I felt comfortable, which was great. So I wasn't really bored, and I made obviously a few friends in the academy too, but it never really dawned on me.
That's great, because you can hear some people who don't get the best of Diggs and they feel like they just have to go home and straight up to the bedroom and keep themselves to themselves, and they don't really feel part of the household.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you see so many players nowadays getting homesick, coming over from Ireland, or being led down the wrong path because they're bored and gambling or whatever. And yeah, I was just really grateful and really lucky to stumble across a great house to stay in.
Great. When did you move out?
I ended up moving out when I went to on loan at Exeter.
Of course, yeah.
So I had to move down to Exeter. It was about 3 hours away. So that was my first real taste of living by myself, fending for myself.
How's the cooking?
It's actually not too bad, to be fair. Since my girlfriend's moved over, though, she's kind of taking the reins. So I'll gladly let her continue.
Hand it over.
Yeah.
Compare the experience of, you know, on the face of it, a lower level like League Two on loan, but senior football, as opposed to what you might be facing at under 23s at a higher level like at West Brom, is there no question in your mind that you're better off getting out on loan at that age?
Yeah, 100%. I think you need to get on loan as quickly as you can as a young player. You see so many players sit around in the 23s and they're 20, 21, 22 years of age, and West Brom are looking at them, or whatever team are looking at them, and they're thinking, will they offer them a new contract? And then they could get released, and then it's hard for clubs to pick you up at that age when you've no experience or anything like that. But even just learning your trade at as young age as possible, putting yourself up against men, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, that is going to make you really like think about things and test your mentality as well. But yeah, I couldn't advise young players to just try get out as quickly as they can.
Well, I guess you're suddenly exposed as well to the realities of professional football. People's jobs are on the line, managers' jobs are on the line. Get the 3 points any way we can kind of attitudes.
Yeah, definitely. That's the main thing. At the end of the day, when you go on loan to these clubs, you're playing with players who are fighting for their livelihood. Like, at the end of the day, if they don't win or if they don't perform, like, potentially they could be relying on bonuses and the money's not coming in. So it really does change your mentality about football, and it really does make you want to work hard. And obviously having the fans there as well push you on a lot. But Yeah, it's the main thing, like going out and working for 3 points, whereas in the 23s, it's not really that competitive. It's kind of more show football than anything. People are playing for the, just to say they play for a big name club rather than actually working hard and going out to these lower leagues.
Yes, I'm sure it's lots of split centre halves and nice patterns of play and a certain pace to it, but that's not the reality of where you need to forge yourself if you're going to have a long career in the game. And your manager, Slaven Bilic, has praised you to the hilt, actually. He's a big fan of yours. He loves your work ethic. He loves your attitude. In all the interviews I've read of his about you, he talks about you as very mature for your age and incredibly hardworking. So tell us about the work rate. Is that something you're conscious of? And what aspects of your game do you work on or do you do extras on? Give us a sense of what you think Bilic is talking about when he talks about your work rate.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, me personally, I just think if anyone's investing time in you, you've got to give your all back to them. But that's just been me since I was younger. I think just being so competitive as I am, I want to win, I want to be the best. And even back when I was playing Gaelic and hurling, like that's always been the same me. I've always been willing to put my body on the line as such, because in life, not everything gets given to people. You kind of have to work hard for it. I suppose even when I was growing up in Kevin's, you wouldn't have predicted me to be one of the players that would have went over to England and even signed the contract there in the first place. So I kind of knew myself that I had to work harder than the person next to me or the person behind me to kind of keep pushing myself forward.
Right. So where were you in the Kevin's pecking order? Like, not the fastest, not the tallest, not the most skillful kind of territory?
Yeah. Like, I wasn't, especially when I signed for Kevin's first, I wasn't the most technically gifted player. Wouldn't have been the fastest either, but yeah, it was just hard work. I think, obviously, again, playing all them sports just made me competitive and made me want to win and made me kind of push myself to the limit almost.
And how's the technique now? Because Bilic actually talked about how you have a very good touch, but you don't overcomplicate things either. So you've had to work on that, presumably, to get it up to Championship and now Premier League level.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's a lot of hard work, especially when I was in the U team at West Brom. A lot of, like, practice after training, gym work, just giving yourself that little edge over the next person. So yeah,
you were involved a little bit with the 21s under Stephen Kenny. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was great. I think it was almost like a breath of fresh air for international football from what we've been through, to come up with to a manager like that who wants us to play like such great and attractive football. And yeah, he's been great. And I think everyone's bought into that to that style with the 21s, and it's got us into a great position as well in the qualifiers. I think we're top of the group, and it's going to be great for Irish football, I think, in general, him stepping up to the seniors now and having worked with so many of the 21s he'll be familiar with.
And under Kenny, was that the most attractive, expansive football that you had played across the Irish age groups?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was the most, like, most confident I think I've seen a team, just the way he pitched his style of football to us, the way he let us go out and express ourselves and made us think positive, made us not fear any other countries, that we're like the main country and that we shouldn't be fearing anyone. We should go out and still play the same game no matter if you're playing against any team. And yeah, it was just a great experience.
Have you, what's the plan for summer? Are you been able to get home to Dublin, or are you still over in the UK?
Yeah, I'm home in Dublin, yeah, and right, just relaxing and chilling out with family and that, and just recouping.
And I guess looking forward to next year. Premier League's kind of an amazing thought at your age for it all to have arrived. I mean, if we were talking November, December, you would have probably grabbed anyone's hand for this. So you must be looking forward to it. I mean, a little bit surreal to think when Match of the Day music comes on in September, you know, there's a fair chance you might pop up. That's an amazing thing. What are your feelings on it all?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I still kind of have to keep thinking to myself like that it's actually happened and that I have the chance possibly to play in the Premier League and to become a Premier League player. And like you said, to see yourself on Match of the Day, like, that's the pinnacle for any young player. Like, when they're sitting there on Saturday evening, they're watching back the games, just thinking, like, one day I want this to be me. And yeah, to have the chance to next season just makes me want to work even harder.
Yeah, fingers crossed it goes well. What do you suspect will be the big difference in standard?
Just the players again. Next step up. Each year has kind of been a different step for me. And then obviously this is the greatest league in the world, the Premier League. You're playing against such great players and such great teams. So, yeah, I think I'm just really looking forward to it.
Great. When do you head back over? When does pre-season get underway?
Pre-season gets back underway at the end of July, I think.
Okay.
Or end of August. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. But I'm taking my time now, just getting the body right.
How has the body responded to what? All but two of the final 18 games. It was a hectic enough schedule. You feeling okay or you need a bit of a break? How are things? You managed to steer clear of injuries in the main.
Yeah, my body feels good. During the lockdown period, I think West Brom all gave us programmes and everyone came back really fit and everyone looked fit. But I think main thing is just mentally, the amount of games that you have, the quick turnaround, your brain and your... It just needs a break, and it's just relaxing now, taking my time and just making sure I put my feet up and just be ready for next season.
Good man. Was Stephen Kenny in touch at all?
Yeah, he sent me congratulations there, so right. It was nice to get a message off him.
Well, listen, thanks so much for the time. Congrats. I mean, a hell of a turnaround last 6 months of your life, and suddenly Premier League beckons and West Brom's Young Player of the Year as well. So Dara O'Shea, hopefully we'll see you in a green jersey soon as well. I'm sure that's one of the ambitions. But in the meantime, enjoy the break and we might catch up with you a couple of months into the Premier League season when things settle down. Thanks for the time, man.
Brilliant. Thank you.
The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble. Really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but... That was nervy, yeah.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Now you're welcome back. We have Kenny Cunningham on the line. Good evening.
Evening, Joe.
So we just, before we spoke to you, or before we started speaking to you, we had Dara O'Shea on the line of West Brom. He was announced as their Young Player of the Year as well this year, or today rather. Made his debut around the turn of the year, and once he got in, he didn't let up. I think he started all but two of their 18 games, did very well at right back, which isn't his preferred position, and now at 21, he's suddenly into the Premier League. By all accounts, a really good player. I don't know if you've seen much of him in the past season or two. I think you came across him briefly when he was a bit younger, but he's kicked on and done very well.
He has done, yeah. I worked with him for a small period with the under-19s a couple of years ago. He was in this squad. He would have been in the squad alongside, funny enough, Declan Rice, Conor Masterson as well, would have been the centre-halves in the squad at that particular time. So... all of those players, really, I've kind of watched from a distance to see how they're kind of progressing. And he's just had to be patient, Joe. He's had to go and play at a lower level. I remember seeing him play at Exeter. Kind of see his name crop up a couple of times. So he's worked hard. He's obviously put his head down and tried to develop his game as best he can and just be patient and wait for his opportunity back at West Brom. That opportunity came at the new year. And as we all know, as a young pro, these opportunities can be few and far between. You've got to grab it. And clearly, he's done that. So I'm delighted for him. And, great opportunity from next season to showcase his talents on the biggest stage of all.
Yeah, he certainly came across very well. And Slaven Bilic has talked about him as a very hard worker. So we'll be seeing him on Match of the Day, hopefully, very soon. And on that theme, actually, Emmett Malone in the Irish Times had a very good piece where he just detailed the season that's been for Irish players in the Premier League. It hasn't been bad, you know. I mean, we're inclined to feel in some ways that the days of Premier League footballers coming from Ireland, you know, are dwindling. But there's plenty there and still plenty doing very well. I mean, not least even on the striking situation. He was talking about Connolly, who scored that good goal at the weekend. And Adam Ida, the highlight certainly was that FA Cup hat-trick. But he's made a bit of an impact. And Troy Parrott's made his debut. And Michael Obafemi as well has played about 660 minutes of Premier League football. He scored 3 goals. That Old Trafford goal included. So, on the whole, the picture was brighter than maybe we had felt it was going to be over the previous few years, I think, was the general thrust of the article.
Yeah, but I never bought into that argument, Joe, to be honest with you, in terms of negativity around, oh, where's this next generation? Where's the young Irish talent? For me, it's always been there, bubbling under the surface, back in Ireland and also at football clubs in England, just not getting the opportunity maybe to express itself. So that has been the case, obviously, this season. One or two of the lads have had an opportunity. You've mentioned a lot of the forward players there, and you're absolutely right. They have had an impact. And they're the ones which kind of jump out at you, but there's other players there as well. I've been watching Jason Malumbi all season down at Millwall and speaking to people down at Millwall. They've been really pleased with him. He's made a big impact down there, and he's one, I think, particularly that central midfield area, Joe. I think potentially going forward, we need to find one or two more options in that area of the pitch. Some years ago, when Robbie stepped back, it was, oh, well, we'll never get another Robbie Keane. Where's the kind of centre-forwards? That argument isn't there at the moment for obvious reasons. You just mentioned the names. Mm. But kind of that central midfield area, Glenn Whelan won't be able to play forever. Just kind of orthodox centre midfield is kind of the more traditional box-to-box, good defensive attributes, you know, comfortable on the ball, you know, can get forward as of when as well. But just good all-round centre midfielders that tick a lot of boxes. And Jason Malumbi is one of them. Josh Cullen as well, spoke to a few Charlton supporters. Albeit he's only on loan down there, they've been really pleased with him. They regard him very highly. And he's impressed me, Joe, a couple of times he's played for Ireland. Not a kind of maybe standout 9 out of 10 performances, man of the match, but he's been very competent in everything that he's done, what's been asked of him. So I've been impressed with him in a kind of subtle way. And then the likes of Jason Knight up at Derby, seen a couple of cameos of him. He's chipped in a few goals at the end of the season. So, yeah, and Darragh Shea you've mentioned as well. Conor Masterson is actually getting a couple of games at QPR as well. Joe, so a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but I'd make the argument there always has been. I think if you delve a little bit deeper, actually do a bit of homework and get out and have a look at these players up close, whether it's kind of League of Ireland or over in the in England, whether it be the Football League, kind of Championship or Premiership, that kind of talent, that young talent, Joe, for me, it's always been there.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess it's great though when you see it coming through at Premier League level. And you're mentioning the midfield players there. The other name which has cropped up as a bonus, because we were worried we mightn't just see this guy again, is James McCarthy. So he's notched up 16 starts and come on in another 17 games on top of that. By his standard of late, that's a lot of football suddenly.
Yeah, that's good news. Yeah, he's the one player I've always rated very, very highly, actually. And I've been kind of being patient for him to get through the spate of injuries. One or two issues there, Joe, but we may not know the truth of it in terms of his relationship with the senior international team. Just you look at it from a distance and you think maybe it hasn't been great, maybe his relationship, maybe one or two of the previous managers. I'm not really sure, like, you know, but he's that type of player. I'm talking about that kind of all-round midfield player. You can't pigeonhole him as a holding midfielder. He's not like a number eight in an attack-minded midfielder who's, you know, got no defensive attributes whatsoever. He is that all-round midfielder that I'm talking about. He reads the game well. You can trust him defensively. Positional sense is good. He uses the ball kind of very efficiently and a good engine in him. So, yeah, to kind of supplement those kind of players, I'm maybe talking about the likes of Jason Malumbi, Josh Cullen, and of course the likes of kind of Jeff Hendrick and one or two others, Conor Horan. It goes without saying those lads will still be around. But James McCarthy's always been the one for me. That one, that dependable one, that kind of almost a deep line midfield position, someone you can trust, someone you know that you can send those fullbacks higher up the pitch. You can get players in advanced areas of the pitch because you've got someone that central midfield area who can dart into those fullback positions quickly, can cover the ground, who can kind of sense danger, you know, won't panic, kind of calm demeanor, that type of player who is kind of, I wouldn't say they're few and far between, Joe, those type of central midfielders, but they're not as many of them around as there was previously. And it's the type of player, number of the top clubs, I know we've touched on it briefly in terms of next season, but number of the top clubs in England are scratching around for that type of player, the likes of kind of Chelsea and Manchester United, I'd say, in particular Tottenham Hotspur as well. So they are invaluable in the modern game.
Before I leave Darragh O'Shea totally behind then, the other thing I wanted to put to you about his career is that he's come through as a centre-half, very much a centre-half all the way through. And for West Brom, over the last 6 months, COVID lockdown aside, he's been in it right back. Well, he's never really played senior football before, but he's pitched up and he's done okay and he's found it okay. When you were coming through, were you predominantly centre-half or right back?
Well, this is the thing. I played centre-half all my schoolboy career in Dublin, but I had to go into the full-back position. I went to England just for a lot of different reasons, physically, technically, I just couldn't deal with it at centre-half, so I was pushed to that right-back position. And it's no bad thing, Joe, it's another string to your bow. You have to learn another position. It is, although right-back is only maybe 10, 15 yards further right than that right-sided centre-half position, it is in some respects totally different in terms of positional sense. You really have to kind of learn the position over a period of time, and it'll do him well. It'll be good in terms of his development there, because in the modern game, Joe, a lot of football, maybe not so much in the Premiership. You see a little bit in terms of a back three. You see a lot of in Italy, and obviously a lot of Italian football recently, but a lot of top teams in Italy are playing with a back three. Mm. And for me, back in the day, a back three invariably consisted of three centre-halves, where for me, as I kind of looked at the game, the more I understood it, the best kind of players to play in that back three for me are two full-backs and a centre-half in the middle. That those wide positions are best suited to a fullback. Obviously, you've got to be mobile, you've got to know how to defend, but if you can go get forward in possession of the ball, be comfortable and drive forward into midfield areas and pass forward and pass through the lines, that's the ideal player you want playing right in the three. So the point I'm trying to make is that kind of versatility in Darragh's game will serve him well, because not only can he play an orthodox centre-back and even right-back in a four, but if Slaven Bilic elects to flip to maybe a back three, next season, he could very easily integrate him in that right at three position, because he'll be more comfortable on the ball. He'll be comfortable drifting into that orthodox right back position and defending in 1v1 situation. So it augurs very well for his development, having that kind of versatility to his game.
Yeah, maybe your answer depends on who you were playing against on a given day, but did you have a preference which was more enjoyable to play?
At different stages in my career, actually, Joe, I enjoyed for the first half of my career playing at fullback, because I had me hadn't had me legs then, whatever little bit of speed that I had.
You had your what then?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe technically speed. Maybe that's the energy, Joe. I had energy in my legs that could actually take me up and down the pitch. And that was new to me, because I never used to, schoolboy football, I never used to cross the halfway line.
Yeah.
So I quite enjoyed it, trying to having to improve my game, better my game, and learn how to cross a ball into the box and maybe play little combinations higher up the pitch. That was totally alien to me. I had to learn that. I had to develop that. So I really kind of enjoyed that the first half of my career. But I must admit, second half of my career, when I lost a little bit of juice in my legs, going back into the centre half, I really enjoyed it as well, because I felt comfortable there, Joe. I'm talking about positional sense, Understanding the position. I was always comfortable at centre half. I kind of understood the positions where I needed to position myself and my relationship with the other kind of defenders around me. So I enjoyed them both, but I must admit the ego probably enjoyed getting forward a little bit more in the first half of my career and wasn't a few crosses into the box and getting a few assists.
I was just going to say, it must be a nice feeling to get down the outside, whipping across, and someone heads the ball in, and you know, you could have been part of the business end of the game. You know, there, I can see how, or even a bit of combination play, especially if you're playing centre half growing up. Yeah, suddenly playing a 1-2 around a fullback and getting in behind, that's kind of exhilarating.
Yeah, that's what, you're right, it is a little bit buzz there. You know, you kind of put a good cross into the box, and I played in some teams I was lucky, particularly at Wimbledon, with some great headers of the ball, centre forwards and centre midfielders. Robbie Earle, probably the best head of the ball I played from centre midfielder, arriving in the box. Marcus Gale, Carl Lieberman, Carl Cord, big strong lads, but great headers of the ball. So I didn't necessarily have to be the greatest cross in the world for them to get on the end of it. But yeah, they'd put it in the corner net, and there'd be a little bit of a buzz with that. But that said, on the flip side,
and Joe, what was your assist bonus, Kenny? What did you get per assist?
It's not as fun if you don't get as many plaudits, and the buzz isn't there to a certain extent, but it's a different type of enjoyment that you get from defending well. Defending is a unit, not so much individually, but the whole defensive unit operating as one, whether it be a back three, four or five, or whatever it is, Just being a part of that, of a defensive unit that kind of functions very well and doesn't concede chances and kind of has the upper hand on opposition forwards. In all honesty, Joe, that's probably the best feeling of all, I must admit.
No, I can imagine that. And you as a back four, or even a back five, you include the keeper, you know you're working well as a unit. And, you know, there's that, we're humming here and it's going well. Yeah. What was your assist bonus at Wimbledon?
I never caught keepers back as part of the defensive unit, Joe. I never quite bought into that one.
You ignored them.
Still stand alone for me, the goalkeeper. Still stand alone, different breed.
I'm going to ask this for a third time. I'm being misheard here. What was your assist bonus at Wimbledon? How much per assist was Kenny Cunningham pocketing?
But believe it or not, we actually had a clean sheet bonus at Wimbledon, believe it or not, because they were very Yeah, they're very proactive in terms of the bonuses, particularly goal bonuses. And I always remember Dean Holsworth, the greediest man in the world, when he got into the box, but for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
I mean, I won't throw figures at you, but there was some sizable chunks of money, and there wasn't a big money paid in wages, but there was some big chunks of money paid to players and at that particular time at Wimbledon for goal bonuses. But so as defenders, we always felt a little bit hard done by, especially if you're flying down the wing, you're putting crosses into the box and these lads are heading them into the back of the net and they won't even buy a drink in the club bar afterwards. So at some point, the owner felt it was only good and proper that he started dishing out a few clean sheet bonuses to defenders, believe it or not.
Well, proper order.
Yeah, so that was very welcome.
Are the goal bonuses still a thing?
I thought I'd be surprised, Joe, because the wages now are at such a level. I don't think they're as significant now. I mean, those goal bonuses potentially, Joe, could have been doubling your wages for some players.
Okay.
You know, a goal of a weekend would practically double your wages. That was significant then. It really was. And I wasn't a big fan of it. I've got to be honest with you. When I learned about it, after a period of time at the club, I know we're going off on a tangent here.
No, it's interesting. I wasn't
a big fan of it. For those reasons, Joe, because it meant so much, doubling your wages and, you know, the lads will like pay the bills and the whole shebang that goes with it. And it definitely did affect people. I'm laughing about one or two players, Dean Holes, that I've mentioned there, but it's only human nature, Joe. You get into the box, you can pass the ball across for a tap-in for your mate, or you can take it on yourself to slightly more tight angle. You probably have a lesser chance of scoring, but at the end of the day, it's going to be an extra $5,000 in your pocket if you pull it off. Well, Don't be surprised if he blanks his mate in the middle of the goal, shifts around to his left foot and closes his eyes and tries to hit it as hard as possible. So it affects your decision-making. I'm laughing about it, but I kind of felt it affected people's decision-making at crucial areas of the pitch,
yeah,
at crucial times. And I didn't think that was a good thing. So in principle, in terms of you do well, you get rewarded. Yeah, absolutely. But for me, it should be a collective thing, the whole group. Now, if you're going to ask me next today on a point of principle, did I hand back my clean sheet money when we got one? No, I didn't. So I shouldn't take the moral high ground on this one either.
Yeah. Although to be fair, it's a different thing. You have to work as a unit to keep the clean sheet. Although I'm going to trawl through the footage now and see if there is any footage of, you know, Wimbledon 3-0 up 90th minute and the opposition score a goal and Kenny Cunningham's really upset and the fans are thinking, look how much he cares. That's the honour he has in the badge. We all know what's going on now.
Yeah, character for Kenny to get that wound up, conceding a goal and the game's over. Yeah, read between the lines.
So, well, that's Darragh O'Shea and a bit of a tangent thrown in and we wish him well and we'll see him in the new year. What game did you watch on closing weekend?
Well, I haven't got a lot of options, Joe. There was only one on my TV. That was West Ham and Aston Villa. So I had a look at that. All the other scores were coming in, but wasn't really thrilling minute stuff. Like, you know, last day of the season, we're so used to that, oh, the big build-up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But wasn't really feeling it, to be honest with you. I left the game a couple of times. I mean, once Watford went 3-0 down, that was pretty much them out. And then obviously Bournemouth got a healthy lead. Then it was pretty much down to Villa, wasn't it, just to get that draw down at the Olympic Stadium, which they managed to do. Like, you know, but I was never hugely invested in the game, maybe as I have been previous end of the season. I've got to be honest with you, wouldn't go as far as to say maybe a damn squib, like, but yeah, I was hardly edge of the seat stuff.
We were just touching on it last night, seeing as you brought up Villa. So Villa without Grealish next year, the consensus, we had Kev on last night and Pat Nevin as well, you'd be a bit worried for them, no?
Well, it all depends on that. I'd be a bit worried if they recruit as well as they did last season.
Yeah, well, they spent enough for what they got.
I'd be extremely worried. Yeah, there would be a concern because obviously the most creative player. I don't think his numbers actually, you know, jump out off the screen at you. You know, it's not as if you're talking about they're going to lose 15 goals and 15 assists. You know, his numbers haven't been that impressive, but clearly he's an integral part to the team. I don't think so. I wouldn't think, write Villa off if he leaves the football club. Just they've got to invest their money wisely. And sometimes, Joe, when you're so dependent on one player, when he kind of leaves the club, it kind of, you know, gives more responsibility to other players in the team. I wouldn't say it's a weight lifted off people's shoulders, but it's an opportunity for other people. That's how I'd say it, for other people to step forward and take on a bit more responsibility on the team. So, no, it will be a blow to lose him, but I certainly think with the money that they'll get from wherever it is, and obviously a bit more money to spend as well. For me, it's more significant that they spend that money, their recruitment is better than it was next season. If it is, they'll certainly have a more than a fighting chance.
For a lot of players now, they will slingshot straight into European football in August and then Premier League will restart, and they're looking at 12 months straight of football. There'll be some tired bodies come the end of next season. For others, they'll have a bit of a break. How did you tend to treat your summers? Would you just drop everything, not even go for a jog, and just sit around, do nothing, let the body repair? Or would you keep working away? What worked best for you at the end of a tough season?
Well, it was depending on what stage of my career, Joe. I remember my first summer home, after my first year in professional football, coming home and getting home in the evening, I think it was, took the car back to Holyhead and the usual hop, skip and a jump, arrived back in my Maz and stuff. But the following morning, I was in my gear, just running around the field out in Coolock and just doing laps, like, you know what I mean? Just timing myself, doing laps, and pretty much repeat that every day for the whole of the summer. Not because necessarily it was the right thing today to do, but it was just like that was my mindset at the time. Right, I'm going back. I've got to get fit. I've got to stay fit. I've got to get fitter. Yeah. Physically, I've got to improve. So that was kind of driving me at the time. Now, that wasn't the case maybe 10, 12 years later, Joe. It might have been a little bit different, maybe a little bit of a drop-off for a week, 2 weeks, a holiday, whatever, then slowly introducing yourself again to the training. But everybody's different, Joe. You got to know your own body, and you understand your body more as you get a little bit older. But don't quite buy into this. I've heard someone that you mentioned there yourself about how the players deal with it. They'll barely have a week off next week. They're back into it. Physically, they're going to be... I mean, all I said was there'll be a few tired bodies. I don't think so. That lockdown, Joe, lads have been at home doing a little bit of training, but very little.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's been noticeable. I don't know if you've watched that much of the European football you've watched. I've watched quite a lot of the Italian football the last couple of months, probably more so than the Premiership.
Right.
And the physical levels of those players, Joe, significantly better than what I've seen in the Premiership. The first couple of Italian games I watched this spot on, the physical condition of the players was great, very dynamic, the kind of movement, the pace of the game, the tempo was really good, pretty much picked up where they left off.
Right.
Probably that wasn't the case when I saw with the Premiership, a little bit slow, lethargic to begin with, probably because the players probably weren't as professional.
Yeah.
And that bit of time they had at home, doing that one-to-one train and having to be disciplined and train to a certain level of intensity, some of them probably dropped a little bit off that, to be honest. So for me, there was more than enough opportunity for players to get that kind of bit of break that you were talking about, time to recover, to recoup. I know psychologically there was always that we could get going pretty soon. Mm. But from a physical point of view, for me, there was enough time there. There was enough period of time for players to rest. Players were injured to get themselves ready. Other players, there was no kind of physical intensity to the training they were doing. There was no kind of, they went on the training pitch physically coming into contact with other players. So I don't buy it as well. I'm actually looking forward to the start next week because I think it should start off a bit quicker than it has done previously. So I'm hoping for a little bit more actually when the season starts.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because Jack Grealish was interviewed about 2 games ago and his form hadn't been great post-restart, and he was saying that he just still wasn't at full fitness. And I thought, this is, you know, what have you been doing to kind of come back so sluggish? So, you know, some definitely didn't work as hard as others. On a final point, so you going home and running those laps in your first year or two as a pro, and you were saying that mightn't be necessarily what you do now. You know, maybe you do more speed work or gym work. Or I'm sure the programs are different. It sounds as much as anything like that was serving you mentally, you know, psychologically. I am going to go back fit. I'm going to make myself stronger. And however much it may or may not have benefited you physically, you probably went back that bit steelier.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. But yeah, I mean, back then, Joe, just the information, the data wasn't there in terms of, like, clubs weren't giving you sheets to take home. This is what you need to be doing when you're at home. I needed it physically to build my body up to get a lot stronger. But I just didn't receive that information for quite a bit, for a number of years, in all honesty. So I probably wasted a lot of time and wasted a lot of energy. Mm. I wouldn't say damaged my body, but probably doing the wrong type of things. I needed to be strength and conditioning, really. You know, I was heading around like Forrest Gump around the field as fast as I could. And I needed to be concentrating on other areas, getting me legs stronger, you know, quads, core stability, all those type of things. But You might as well have been talking French, like, to me, saying those words to me. So that information is there now for the players. But I think psychologically, it's nice to get away. for a week or two, whether that's family, friends, or whatever it is, Joe, just kind of switch off. But from a physical, physiologically, I think your body almost demands it. I just couldn't do it. Even in my latter years, Joe, I couldn't switch off for kind of 2, 3, 4 weeks without doing anything. My kind of body mind just wouldn't allow it. But you learn that in all sports, you know, elite level of stuff, whatever. You understand your body more as you get a bit old. You know exactly what's required. So there's no excuses, really, when players come back into the group. Their physical levels should be exactly where they need to be to go into real kind of intensive training drills and training. So that's why I think the season will start. It'll start pretty well in terms of the tempo and the intensity. And it should be as high as it's ever been, if not more so.
Mm. Well, listen, we'll be talking to you soon about it, and Champions League and Europa League on the way. Kenny, thanks a mil. Appreciate it. See you later.
Anytime, Joe. Take care.
This is OTB Sports Radio, Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
When you lose a big match like that, you have to soak that up.
Mm.
But to go into a dressing room and say you're celebrating to it, disrespectful. I mean, who is Mourinho to talk about disrespect?
The best analysis of all the week's football from Ireland's number one football man.
Pogba's a social media star. Right, he appeals to the young people now. He does his dance, he has his hair and all that. That's all he's worried about, in my opinion. Now, worry about being a great player, Nathan.
John Giles. Every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
Okay, that's us done for the evening. As ever, you can download all of tonight's show. Just download the OTB app. That's where you'll find everything. We had Eric Donovan on. We had David Brady, who was in brilliant form earlier on. And as you've just heard, Kenny Cunningham and West Brom's Dara O'Shea with us. OTB AM coming your way tomorrow morning. Amongst other things, they'll have John Duggan talking Galway races. And then we're back evening time, as usual, 7 o'clock. Wednesday night rugby tomorrow. Keith Wood with us, and we'll be joined by the BBC's Andrew Cotter, who has spent lockdown making viral videos of his dog, but is also, obviously, amazing rugby commentator, golf commentator, etc. So he's on the way tomorrow with Keith on Wednesday night rugby. In the meantime, Tom Dunn on the way next.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.